Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to The Tom Woods Show. This is episode 2431. I'm here with Alex Dresser, who listens to this here program just like you good folks. And we got into a bit of correspondence recently because in tandem with my new book, Diary of a Psychosis, I also released a companion volume telling the stories of people who endured the crazy restrictions and what happened to them. And that book is called Collateral Damage, and you can get that for free at diaryofcovid.com. And I wish I'd been able to put Alex's story in there, but he's got a heck of a story. And I feel like these were stories that nobody was allowed to hear. You didn't dare speak out about what was being done because they would smear you as a grandma killer. It was a completely bizarre time, as you and I both know. And so I feel like one way we can't undo these injustices, but we can at least give them a voice. And so I wanted to talk to Alex because, you know, a lot of people have moved on to the next thing. But that's easier said than done for a lot of people who really got screwed during what was done to us. So Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tom. It's a real honor. Like you said, I've been a listener for a while. So it's one of those things, like, I guess some people dream of, like, meeting their favorite celebrity, and might as well you, so.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right. Well, let's jump in. Obviously, we're going to talk about your particular story, but in your family, it wasn't just you. It was a bunch of people who suffered in one way or another from what was done. And, you know, in that little book I just mentioned, Collateral Damage, the subtitle, this is the free book that I give away, is Victims of the Lockdown Regime Tell Their Stories. I specifically had it as the lockdown regime and not just the lockdowns, because I feel like the whole regime is not just the lockdowns. It's also the masks, it's the mandates for the shots, it's the whole package. And so you've got some people in your family. In fact, can we start with cousin Isaac and what happened there?
Yeah, absolutely. Me and my cousins all grew up really close together, and he's more like a brother to me. A lot of times we lived in the same house together. And most of my cousins ended up joining the armed forces. He specifically joined the Air Force, and he was deployed a couple times, and he really loved what he did, and he enjoyed being in the service, and he put a lot of time and a lot of his life into it. And he's definitely on the same page we are. He's also listens to your show, so when everything started happening, there was a lot of skepticism that we had, and he ended up being in a position that was extremely unfortunate, being in the military, to where they basically told him that he would be dishonorably discharged if he didn't end up taking the back seat. And so he had just gotten a house with his wife. He had two baby girls. So he wasn't really in a position to leave the military dishonorably, even though he kind of feared that there's a little more behind it than just them trying to, you know, do something right in the way that they were acting about it. So he ended up getting the shot, and he'd already had an injury to his arm from one of his previous deployments and was already battling some medical stuff with the VA. And so he got the shot and he developed POTS, which I'm not a medical expert, but he went from being a really well taken care of individual in great shape. Obviously in the military, you have to be in pretty decent shape anyways, but he can no longer stay in for more than 10 minutes after he was injured from the back scene, which was verified by his doctors that that's what it came from. And so he couldn't hold his daughters anymore. He could no longer work in the military, and he had to fight for many years up until actually about a year ago is when they finally gave him a proper medical discharge, because before that, they were not going to give him medical discharge. He wasn't going to receive benefits. It was a constant fight. It definitely affected him and his wife's relationship greatly, not only his physical condition from the injury, but all of the constant wondering if we're going to have money to keep paying for the house, get food on the table for the girls. So we're blessed that we have a very good family, and everybody stepped in. And so he got through it, and he ended up being able to honorably discharge and get his benefits and everything he deserved for the time he served. And yeah, that was a lot for him.
Now, did the medical officials inside the military concede officially that it was a vaccine-related injury?
I believe that they did, but it wasn't the medical officials in the military that concluded that his injury was from a vaccine. It was from private doctors he'd been seeing. He had to go and see a multitude of doctors and get tons of paperwork from all of them to go back to the VA to prove he was injured, which obviously was very injured.
Well, it sounds like, so this something similar, he wasn't in the military, but your cousin Matt also wound up with a vaccine injury. Now, there was a time, it has eased up a bit. There was a time when you weren't really allowed even to tell these stories because it might discourage people from getting the shots. In other words, because people are imbeciles and they can't hear any anecdotes to the contrary whatsoever, or they'll go and do crazy things. These are the same people who want to go and spread democracy everywhere, even though they've just told us people are too stupid to hear anecdotes about other people's experiences. Out of this world crazy. But tell me about cousin Matt.
So my cousin Matt, who is also very close to me, he is not as skeptical per se of the regime and the establishment as the rest of us were before. And he definitely has changed the way that he thinks about the things that are being told to us in terms of especially medically related to the vaccine, because he ended up getting the vaccine as well. And he was one of the people at our family gatherings where we'd have our friendly family banter about, you know, our opinions on everything. And we didn't particularly agree on a lot of it. And he ended up also developing POTS for the vaccine, which was also verified by his doctor. So after that, you know, he was a little more open to listen to some of the stuff we had to say and some of the information that we wanted to give him, because it affected his life greatly when he could no longer be as physically active with his kids. He has two young children as well. So it just, you know, from one to the next.
So the injury persists even now?
Yes. What they have is lifelong. It'll never go away or get better.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah,
so
it's,
I mean, this almost seems trivial in relation to that, but would you say he's undergone a transformation in the way he looks at the world?
Oh, I definitely think so. And I don't think he's as like vocal and outgoing about it as maybe me and the rest of my cousins are, but there was definitely a very big shift in the way that we discussed things after all that happened, because, you know, it's pretty crazy to see multiple different people in your family all have, you know, their lifespans have been indefinitely shortened from this. And so that's, I don't know anybody who would want that for people they love. Yeah. So,
yeah, unthinkable. Let's skip ahead. I want to talk about your own story.
Okay.
You had two jobs at the time?
Yeah, I was working at a bookstore part-time. So when they started shutting everything down, they got rid of the part-time employees. And I had also started working for an auditing service for bars, kind of like the bar rescue stuff, where they measure everything, like give them a report. And I was really enjoying that and starting to kind of work my way up in it. The guy I worked for at the time, his name is Bo. He was a good mentor to me. He really started teaching me how to run a business and really get my own feet on the ground and take care of stuff. And he owned a bar, and he owned a bar auditing business. So when everything shut down, he was pretty worried what he was going to do, because he had a lot of irons in the fire in a business that was immediately closed when everything happened. And so when I lost both of those positions, I couldn't afford to obviously keep living like a normal person. I had not a significant amount of money in my savings, because I had just started working my way up to where I was getting comfortable in life. And that was all gone pretty quick. I ended up moving back in with my mom. She was super thrilled, but she's a hero and one of the greatest people in my life. So, of course, you know, I was a good mother. She was like, "Nah, no problem. Just move in the basement." I'm like, "Yeah, this is great. It's what I wanted." So,
but that's so demoralizing, because then you look to the future, and for a while, I think there were some people in our camp who were so black-pilled, they were suggesting that none of this would ever go away, and there was no hope. And I mean, I was hearing people saying there'll never be concerts again, they'll never have theater again. None of that was true, but it just intensified everybody's depression, and it was pointless and stupid to say things like that. But even so, your time horizon at that point, nobody knows how long into the future any of this is going to go. And everybody's making these unreasonable demands of you. So this must have put you into a, I mean, I would guess a kind of severe depression.
Yeah. Other than just losing my jobs and all of my financial stability, the person I was seeing at the time had just started her nursing career. And we definitely didn't agree on a lot of things that were happening with the situation. So that ended up being a huge piece that severed our relationship. So I lost the person we had been talking about our future, getting the house together, and that just disappeared so quickly after everything happened. And so after having lost virtually everything, except for my mom, I was very much contemplating things that were not good to think about. And in a very severe depression, I was pretty black-pilled at the time, thinking, you know, what am I going to do? But there's nothing that I could do to start building. They won't even let you go out and get another job. It took me to probably the darkest place I've ever been in my life. Thankfully, it did help me increase my faith because I had to turn to something. And
But you turned it around. I mean, you were at square one again, and yet somehow you turned it around. I mean, what do you attribute that to?
I attribute that very strongly to the support of my family. If they weren't there, I would very much have been just out on the streets. I would have been homeless, so I had to figure out where to live. And they just kept encouraging me, and that as we slowly saw some things start opening back up again, there was little tidbits of hope. The restaurants and bars started opening again. I could go back and work with Bo. I was very thankful he got to keep his business and he got to keep his bar open. And I just had to start from square one, very much from square one. And it's took a long time. I just moved into this place. This is my first place. It's mine. I moved into it 7 months ago. So it's about how long it took.
Well, good for you, though, man. Congratulations. I'm quite sure there must be a lot of people who were just so crushed and devastated by this that they never recovered. But here you are talking to me. I'm sorry that all of this is such sad material to talk about, but
it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is, right? I can't not ask about what happened with your grandmother. I mean, it's incredible the suffering that one family endured through this. And again, these are not stories anybody hears about or asks about or get broadcast anywhere, but I want this to be broadcast here. So talk to me about your grandmother.
So my grandmother was the matriarch of our family for the most part. She was an old Polish Catholic lady. Parents came over on the boat. She's hard as nails, higher pain tolerance than an MMA fighter. And she's gone through a lot in her life and endured a lot of sickness. Actually had a lot of her brothers died from tuberculosis. She lived through all that just fine. But during the COVID era, when they decided that there were certain procedures they were no longer going to make essential at the hospitals, one of those apparently was colon cancer screenings. So she ended up developing colon cancer without knowing it. During that time, she was exposed to COVID multiple times. She already got tested. She refused to get tested, but we're pretty sure she got it while she had cancer and didn't know it. She got over the COVID just fine. She had pneumonia like 20 times in her life. So that was fine. And she started having to go and do like the online calls with doctors because she was having so much abdominal pain. So she would never complain about anything normally. She's having so much abdominal pain. She started doing these doctor screens and they just kept going, oh, it's probably just a UTI. They'd send her some medicine for UTI and obviously didn't get better. So the moment she was allowed to go back in and see her doctor again physically, I had dinner with my mom last night and she told me, she was like, oh, I want you to share like what happened at the hospital. And so they went in and the doctor, all he did was feel her abdomen and she just looked at her and said, Steffi, I'm so sorry. Because it was that bad. And all I had to do was physically feel her abdomen to know that there was virtually nothing they could do at that point. And then when they ended up getting the MRIs done, it was inoperable because it was touching her spine. So they basically said, how would you like to enjoy the rest of your time? And she said, I want to be in my bed, my own home, obviously, like most people would to be if they know that they're reaching the end. She didn't live very much longer after that. We had a lot of family at the house all the rest of the time, spent the time with her, and they would listen to her praying, and this is how stubborn she was. She'd be arguing with God, trying to go like, I just need like this much more time. So there's a few more things I have to do. And then she just said, God, okay, I know, like, you decided it's time, it's time. And when I saw her for the last time, she's an iconic woman in our life. She's so important to our family. We saw her for the last time. She looks at me, she goes, you don't gonna die, right? Yes, we all know. She's like, good. So like, I didn't know if you knew. We know. And she passed away peacefully in her sleep, thankfully. Obviously, she had an experience, a lot of pain, but it really deeply affected our whole family. Every single person in our family respected her very greatly. And I remember at my sister's wedding, my sister got married this year. I was blessed to ordain it, which was also a lot of stress. But I got to do that. And later at the reception, my cousin Dane, we're sitting at, you know, the table just hanging out, and he just started like crying, like bawling his eyes out. I'm like, geez, man, like, what's going on? And he just started saying, like, it's not fair that grandma's not here. Like, she should be here. And he started saying, like, she's not going to be at my wedding. And I'm telling him, like, you know, she's here. She's with us. She's just not stayed in there bugging you. She's watching us and smiling. So, you know, we still talk about it. She shouldn't have had to die that way. There's no justifying that happened.
Just the other day, this week, I was talking to Scott Horton on the show, and he told me about a journalist friend of his who wrote for antiwar.com, who I guess lived in California, and he wasn't able to get in to be seen. And then by the time they did see him, they said, oh, you're stage four. Sorry.
Yeah. I'm not, obviously, I'm just an average guy. I'm not a medical expert, but I believe colon cancer is one of the most easily detectable and slowest growing.
That's what they say.
Yeah. Treatable. That's what I've read. So
yeah,
the fact that it was that bad when they finally discovered it, should have been discovered a long time ago. Just, it made us mad. It made a lot of us really mad because it was avoidable.
Hey everybody, it's a message from Old Woods here. Now, you know that a lot of content creators have Patreon or whatever. And you also may remember when you were little, those PBS fund drives, if you donated, they gave you like an umbrella. I think it's bad luck for me to actually have this umbrella open in the house. Well, I'm here to tell you, you don't need any of that, because you should become a member of the Tom Woods Supporting Listeners Program, because you get way more than a crummy umbrella and way more than anybody else is giving you. So for example, even the lowest contribution level gets you every month in the physical mail. Remember the physical mail? My 16-page newsletter. That's right. It's not the same as the emails. It's all fresh, original content. 100 octane woods. Yes, I know that's not correct usage. I don't care. 100 octane woods delivered to your mailbox every single month. Okay, so that's the first thing. Second thing, you know I host murder mystery dinner parties all over the country. Well, you know what? If you're a supporting listener of the Tom Woods Show, you can go to those for free. You don't have to pay one extra cent. You become a member also of the Tom Woods Show Elite, which is my no censorship group, which, by the way, helped to keep a lot of people sane during COVID. You get transcripts of all the interviews I do. You get an invite to my Christmas party, which features a guest speaker and a dinner prepared in my home by a chef. And that's just what you get at the lowest level. So don't spend your life asking yourself what might have been. Go to supportinglisteners.com right now and be a part of all the awesomeness. You mentioned your church a bit, and obviously there have been a lot of cases where churches have been divided against themselves. Half the people are hysterics and half the people aren't. And then the pastor has to figure out how to adjudicate between this and what the services are going to look like or if they're going to have them. And I think a lot of churches just rolled over. Okay, well, you don't want us to meet. I guess we better not. What happened in yours?
So I'm very thankful I get to serve at my church. So I get to be a little more privy to things like their policy, especially during that time, because as a volunteer, they try to let us know first, obviously, okay, we're changing this next week and just be prepared and all that. So our church, thankfully, a lot of the leaders weren't really going along.
Yeah.
They're definitely on our side, especially our lead pastor. He's one of my good friends. When we had conversations about it, we were very much on the same page. So he was kind of trying to talk to the church elders and, you know, his other friends and the other pastors in the church and go like, you know, what do we do? And there ended up being a lot of infighting just because there were members and important positions that were very much not interested in keeping up with the masks and saying like, we need to meet in person. That's what it says in the good book is you need to congregate as a people. And so the pastors were very much about that. They wanted to have physical services. They also wanted to try to be as respectful as possible to everybody and let people make their own choices. So they started doing, we do the online video, record the services. They have them recorded as a podcast. And then they kept doing as soon as they were allowed and as much as they were allowed to, they were doing physical and personal services. They very much wanted to keep that going. But they started kind of going, if you don't want to wear your mask, we're not going to require you to wear your mask. We're not going to ask you for a vaccine card. We're not doing any of that. If you want to come to church, we welcome you to the church. And there was a pretty significant amount of people who were very unhappy about that, that were people that were thinking, well, you're just going to start killing all the old people in the congregation if you don't make everyone wear masks. Well, y'all grab the same door handle walking into the church. So, I mean, it's, you know, a lot of people were just thinking, you know, okay, we got to, you know, give them the option. You can come in person, you can watch online, we'll put the hand sanitizer things everywhere, you know, and a very, very significant portion of the congregation never came back and definitely affected the church negatively. And there were friendships, like lifelong friendships with congregation members that were splintered that never still have recovered. People that have said, you know, we're never coming back. We don't want to talk to any people anymore. And honestly, it blew my mind because I really didn't think that would cause so much division of going like, hey, you know, if you want to stay home, that's cool, but we're not going to force people to wear masks. And I'm not even coming. Well, I don't even want to be a part of the church. The pastors, it killed them. You know, they were like, we thought we made the right choice. And I think they did. You know, the numbers are coming back up. Fortunately, people are starting to come back, but it's taken till 2023 now, end of 2023.
Yeah. And well, look, some of it isn't just that people stayed away because of COVID. I think what happened in some cases was that they stayed away because they got in the habit of staying away. You know, when you, you know, you lose the habit of going every Sunday, like with any habit, maybe you don't bring it back.
Right.
So there's also that. There are people who might have been maybe lukewarm and this just pushed them over the fence into just not attending anymore. It's easy to quantify things like all-cause mortality and statistics that you can put on a chart. But so much of the devastation that was done to society comes in areas that you can't quantify so well, like the loss of friendships. How do I count those up? Families pitted against each other. Organizations, half of which favor one approach, half the other. Bitterness, suspicion, anger, resentment. You can't quantify that. It had devastating effects for a society and how society functions and trust levels between people, the kinds of things that make society work. It just, it was like an acid that ate through all these things. And you saw it in your own life everywhere you turned.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There were a lot of friendships that were definitely put in jeopardy at the time for me personally, because I was trying to be a little more outspoken about it and at least get like, hey, you know, we're not all PhDs here, but we're not, you know, we're not like room temperature IQ. We can look at what's going on and think that there's at least something fishy. You got to ask yourself questions. And some of my friends, we definitely did get along about it, but I'm thankful to say that there were, for me personally, not very many friendships that were severed by it. There are some family members that until recently we didn't see eye to eye, but I'm really thankful that both sides of my family are incredibly good people. So it didn't ruin us in terms of our personal relationships. What ruined well, it didn't ruin our family, but what affected our family is obviously everything. All of the injuries that people sustained, obviously my grandmother passing away, my grandparents on the other side, they unfortunately were very scared. They were just constantly being told, everyone around them, that you walk, go outside, you're going to die. And so, you know, they're thinking, we're not young. And they locked themselves inside. My grandma became very depressed. My grandmother on my father's side, she lives for the holidays, you know, like a lot of grandmas. So when I was taken away from her, she's like, I don't have anything to do. That killed her. My closest friend's Don, he had a very nice position at an auto manufacturing company. I won't name specifically, but they're an international company. And so they had some pretty serious mandates and things they imposed upon him. He refused to take the vaccine. He lost his job from that. And he had just bought a house with his fiance. He had to figure it out. He ended up going and working for his dad at the time. So he didn't have anywhere else to go. There's too many people that had so much taken away from them for no good reason.
Yeah, that's it in a nutshell. Can you take a minute, though, to tell us about what your mother does for a living and what she saw?
So my mother has been in education for almost all her life, and she is currently a special education director at a vocational school here in the area. She's pretty much my hero, not just for helping me out during the bad times, but she's always really been there for me. And she's not just there for me, like she volunteers and goes out of her way to do a lot of things for a lot of different people. And I think somebody who's in the special education department probably does have a special love for humanity, and she brings it out. And through the COVID era, when they started, you know, shutting down the schools for, you know, whatever reasons that they thought would justify it, she had a lot of students that she took care of, and a lot of those students didn't particularly have good at-home situations, which is what led them to be in special education programs in the first place. Some of those kids only got their food at school. So when those kids couldn't go to school anymore, they didn't get a breakfast and a lunch anymore. It was the only food they were getting. And so my mother, because she's an angel, was like, well, I'll just feed them. So she started making a bunch of food, you know, big pans of lasagna, and going to these families' houses and dropping them off to make sure that these kids could eat food. Because shutting down the schools wasn't just, well, they lost a year of education, which especially for kids with special needs is very significant for them to lose that year, because they need all the help they can get to get the best out of life. And when you take a whole year of education away from them, then there's ones that can't even get food because they can't go to school anymore. I mean, that's one of those things I don't think a lot of people actually realized, is that was something that was happening, is people couldn't eat anymore. That's pretty significant, that children with special needs couldn't eat anymore because they decided to close the schools down.
Yeah.
But I really hope there's a lot of other people like my mom out there that stepped up and helped their communities. And I believe there are. I believe that communities get at heart, even though there's a lot of ugliness. Get to see it.
I just, as you know, I wrote about this a lot, thought about it every single day. I'm sure you did, right? Because of your experiences.
Yep.
And I don't know. I'm just exhausted. I'm exhausted contemplating the scale of what was done and knowing that absolutely nobody would be held accountable. Not only would they not be held accountable, they would be celebrated, that half the country would still think they were just wonderful people doing their best who occasionally made a mistake, but their heart was in the right place. That's demoralizing. So, it's, you know, and maybe you saw a couple of weeks ago, I got an email from somebody, and I made an example of this person in my newsletter, but I got an email from somebody complaining that I was still talking about this and that I was still upset about such and such vaccine company or whatever. And the person said, look, you know, most people have just moved on, you know, and they're enjoying their lives, and you should do the same.
Yeah, I did read it, yeah.
Yeah, and I just thought, you know, when has that worked for us? You know, so I made up a funny, fake Thomas Jefferson quotation. Well, as Thomas Jefferson said, whenever evil is committed, just get over it. You know, like, you can't imagine him saying that.
No.
And that's how I feel. I refuse to, quote, get over it. I want to talk. We have to process this, and we have to make sure that for any curious person in the future who wonders if maybe the official story isn't the whole thing, that there's an alternative for him to be aware of. So that's what I'm doing. And in telling me your story, which inspired me to invite you on, you're doing the same thing.
Well, I'm truly honored you invited me on. I was excited to get the book. So I was like, I'm going to shoot Tom an email because like I've always been a huge fan. And when you responded right away, I was like, oh my gosh, wow. Like, that's cool.
Yeah, not only did I respond, I said, hey, why don't you come on and talk about this? Which is probably not what you were expecting.
No, not at all. I ended up calling one of my friends and go like, Tom Woods just invited me on the show. And they're just like, oh yeah, you'll like go through the screening process and maybe in a couple months, you know, you might do something. I'm like, it's crazy. I can't believe you even just emailed me back. And you're like,
yeah, no, the screening process was.
You want to record Monday?
Yeah, the screening process was I read your email. I said, people have to hear this guy's story. Get the heck over here. So I'm glad we're able to do it. Now, tell people, I'll put your Twitter in the video description on the show notes page, but tell people your Twitter so people can follow you if they so choose.
Okay. My Twitter is at Martini Zealot. It's just how it sounds. It's spelled MartiniZealot. Yeah, I'm on Twitter. It's, if you can see the background, then you probably won't be surprised. So.
Right. So I'm following you now. So I hope other people will. You may get, I don't know if your direct message thing is open for anybody to write to you, but you may hear from some people.
Yeah, it's open.
Okay, that's good. It's good people can communicate with you there. First of all, thank you for, these are really deeply personal things that you just shared with a whole lot of people. So I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being willing to do that, because the world needs to know that these things happened and that for every story they hear, there are a million more they won't hear. So my thanks to you for that.
Right. And like I said, once again, I'm very truly thankful to be on the show and share this. And like you said, there's so many people who experience a lot of the same things, because it wasn't just, you know, one or two people that, you know, it's so many people were affected, lost their businesses and their livelihoods and loved ones and friends. And yeah, it needs to be talked about still. I still bug my friends and be like, hey, you remember, you know, but yeah, I'm thankful for what you do and what you've done.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. So I got your Twitter linked. And then my own appeal to everybody is do please check out diaryofcovid.com. Make sure and get the free books that I have there too, because one of them is that collateral damage book. And to my knowledge, nobody anywhere has assembled a book of people's stories like this. There is no such book. And I'm giving it away for nothing when you buy my regular book, Diary of a Psychosis. So check out diaryofcovid.com. Thank you very much, Alex. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.